The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
It's primary season, and that means we have no shortage of things to talk about on the Political Breakfast this week. Hi, I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host, bringing you opinions from the left and right. We've got just a few weeks left now before the May 22nd primary elections. Early voting's already underway. We'll look at how the races are shaping up. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms addresses the state of the city after a pretty tough first 100 days in office. And time is running out for Governor Nathan Deal to decide which bills to sign or veto. Our lineup is a bit different this week. We're joined by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson, pinch-hitting for Republican strategist Brian Robinson this time, one of his former bosses, former Georgia Congressman, Republican Lynn Westmoreland. Greetings.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about being here.
And it's good to be with you, Congressman.
Yeah.
And I would say you look very, very dapper today.
Well, only
Brian Robinson was sending in one of his former bosses in his stead to make sure that he keeps his conservative values at the top of this broadcast.
Yeah, well, he told me, he said, don't do too good because I want to come back. I said, okay, all right.
Let's start with the gubernatorial races in both parties. Theron, I'm going to start with you. The Democratic race, Stacey Evans versus Stacey Abrams, a fascinating kind of evolution in Stacey Abrams' strategy. Remember, she started out going out to every place in Georgia she could, real grassroots. Now, in the closing stages, as early voting has started, the star power comes out. Kamala Harris, the senator from California, endorsing her. She appears and brought in some Hollywood power, too. So she's really trying to make a closing argument after building the grassroots, kind of the reverse of what we often see.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Dennis. And what we're seeing is that sort of a similarity between what Mayor Bottoms did in her campaign. At the very end, she brought out a lot of key celebrities and key people that reaches a different demographics of sort of sporadic voters. But I think what's interesting also with Abrams is that she's now focusing more on the metro area. And I think that she knows what I know, that 70% of the vote in a Democratic primary is going to come from around these 20 plus counties in the metro area. But let's not also forget what Evans has done. Evans had a good week as well.
No accident that she was highly visible at Mayor Bottoms' State of the City address. She endorsed her during the mayoral race.
Not only was she attending, I mean, she worked the room very well. She was shaking hands. And then also she picked up a big endorsement this week also from former State Senator Vincent Ford. Who was a candidate for mayor. And so, and let's not forget that Stacey Evans came out and endorsed then candidate Keisha Lance Bottoms, who was running for mayor. But Dennis, at the end of the day, I think what's going to be very important about this Democratic primary between these two very qualified women who are running to assume the top job in our state, I think it's going to still come around education, and I think one of them are going to have to crystallize their message around job creation. And how do you do that if you were to be elected governor?
Yeah, Congressman, when you look at that, as you watch the Democrats, a lot of what they're talking about now, like redistricting, for instance, is very important to the Democratic base. But the general election, as Theron was implying, is going to revolve around other issues like education. So as a Republican watching this and with a primary in your own party that's running toward the base, how do you say, okay, you guys have to make a pivot here?
Well, you know, I don't really know Stacey Evans that way, but I do know Stacey Abrams, and she's a good candidate. And I mean, she's a bright lady, and I mean, I think she's done a real good job with the Democratic caucus in the House. But yeah, I mean, redistricting is a real important issue that the Democrats get. And the Republicans, you know, I guess once you get the majority, you kind of forget about the blocking and tackling part of this. But yeah, no, I mean, jobs, the economy, those things are much more broader issues to the voters when it comes down to the general election. And so that's going to be the thing that I think they really have to concentrate on.
And on the Republican side, it's a different dynamic again because you have so many candidates and the fight is to get into a runoff. Brian Kemp, of course, got a lot of attention for the ad with the young man trying to date one of his daughters, and he's holding Brian Kemp is holding a shotgun. It seems that they're saying, I'm more pro-Second Amendment than you are.
Yeah.
In a general election, that's not going to matter as much, although it matters to a lot of people. But they have to get there first.
Exactly. And I think that's the one thing. You know, when you're a Republican, you can't be far right enough. And when you're a Democrat, you can't be progressive enough. And people that's been in politics know that all the work gets done between the 40s. Mm-hmm. That's where everything gets done. And
the 40-yard lines.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, the middle of the field.
Exactly. And so the bases are pushing all these people to the back of the end zone. And that's the reason that we have got a lot of these stalemates. But I'm really surprised that Tippins and Hunter Hill and some of those guys hadn't started really going after each other, because I do think this is a race for second right now with some of these other candidates rather than.
So you think with his money and his name recognition, Casey Cagle is in?
I do. I mean, Casey's going, I 100% believe he's going to be in a runoff, and I'm really surprised that Brian and Clay and Hunter have not really gone after each other more trying to get to that second spot.
As for the rest of the Democratic race, Theron, you've got Stacey Abrams, again, with a lot of recognizable folks coming in. Is there a pathway here for Stacey Evans, and how does she blaze that path, if you will?
The race is still wide open, and because every polling that I've seen, whether it's a public poll or a private poll that I've been able to research, is that there's still a large number of undecideds. I think the last public poll that I saw, even though Abrams had a lead on Evans, 50% of the electorate were still undecided. And a lot of these undecided voters, Dennis, are women. And so I still think that Evans has a chance. Let me just go on record for saying this. Like, the demographics are definitely on the side of Abrams, right? Because we know that 60%+ of the people who are going to turn out in this Democratic primary are going to be people of color. But I would tell you this. I think Evans did a very smart thing of going up on TV very early. And Congressman, you know this, and you represented this state very well, and you had a large congressional district. If you give your opponent 3-4 weeks of television where you're directly in contact with voters, so it doesn't matter where they live, as long as they're registered in the state of Georgia, I think that gave Evans a bump. And what you see is though, Abrams is able to continue her grassroots strategy because she's receiving a lot of national PAC money. A lot of the ads that we're seeing on television are not being paid for by the Abrams campaign. They're being paid for by the PAC. And I'll tell you this, and I know Stacey Evans very well, and I've known her for over 20 years, and she is not going to let up one bit. She's a hard worker. But again, the challenge that Evans has is that the demographics currently as they stand are definitely in favorable Abrams. But I think that if Evans can continue to run a very positive campaign around education and also making sure that she can touch Democratic voters and expand the electorate, I think that this race is going to be too close to call as we get ready to lead up to Election Day.
Real quickly. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Theron, you know, you look at Bob Trammell, got to be the minority leader in the House, and the Democrat caucus is probably more people of color percentage-wise than what you're talking about. And so I think it was a matter of who had the brightest picture or the best agenda for what they wanted to do. And I think the same thing is true with the two Stacys.
Well, Congressman, you're hitting on something that a lot of us insiders talk about. I mean, let's just really expand on what the congressman just talked about. And when you were the leader, I mean, you had a reputation of working across the aisle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny that I thought you were going to be a little bit more to the right on redistricting. And I remember how a staunch advocate you were for voter ID. But even though the Democrats disagree with you, and I know that when you even got to Congress, Democrats disagree with you on a lot of things, but you always had sort of the ability to work with them. So what the congressman is implying, Dennis, is that at a time where Abrams left the state house, her ordained person to succeed her was Carolyn Hughley.
From Columbus. A veteran member of the House.
So she had been the whip.
She came in when I did.
Came in when the Congressman Westmoreland came in. But here comes this guy named Bob Trimble, who was one of the first people to support Stacey Evans when she decided to run for governor. And he was able to get in this caucus, which is dominated by people of color, and largely because—
And Carolyn Hughley is a woman of color.
Woman of color. Mm-hmm. And the way that he was able to do it is that there are some people who felt like Leader Abrams, and this is not me saying this, I want to be very clear, there are just some people who had the opportunity to work with her felt at times that she wasn't as big of a team player as she should have been.
Well, she has said this week that she wishes she had built a few more bridges in the House. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the Democratic electorate as a whole, is that too much inside baseball? And do they care more about, okay, let's not have a ruinous feud here, which we saw back when Mark Taylor and Kathy Cox slugged it out with each other and left the party in shambles for the general election? How important is it for Stacey Evans and Stacey Abrams to patch it up no matter who wins?
I wrote a column this week in Inside Advantage that talked about that exactly. And I said in the column, while I believe in spirited campaigning, let's not let what happened to us in 2006, when you had a very well-liked, respected Kathy Cox, the Secretary of State, went up against a well-organized, well-funded, well-respected lieutenant governor in Mark Taylor. We are still to this day, Dennis, recovering from how nasty that campaign got. There are white women in this state who left the Democratic Party in 2006 and have continued to be either independent voters or Republican voters because of that primary. But this is the one thing I wanted to say, and I think this is kind of shocking. I cannot believe that either camp is not talking about Donald Trump. Because one thing that we know right now, he is the most unpopular elected official in the country right now amongst Democrats, right? You can be against Donald Trump and be in a room full of Republicans, and Republicans still will at least respect you and let you stay in the room. The second thing that I cannot believe they're not talking about, as we saw this week, a poll just came out and said that Georgians fully support a comprehensive gun control, gun reform policy in this state. So that's a huge shift of where we were just 2 months ago. And so I think those are two issues that Democratic voters can be fired up about. And I just think that if they're listening to campaigns, I think you've got to get in here and you've got to figure out a way to talk about how you're going to resist Donald Trump. But also, don't be afraid to talk about full comprehensive gun control in this state.
Congressman, Republicans have to slug it out just to get into the runoff, and they have to appeal to voters who are big Second Amendment strict constructionists, right?
Yes.
So, but do they have to keep an eye on what Theron was talking about?
Well, you don't want to get too far out on the limb, you know, that you can't get back. But, you know, the thing about, and I think the reason that a lot of the Republicans haven't talked about Donald Trump is that most people either love him or hate him. But right now, the economy is doing better. And I've often heard people vote their pocketbook, you know. And the reality of it is, regardless of whether you like him or if you don't like him, you look at what's happened in North Korea, you look at the economy, and you look at some of the other things that I think he said, look, I'm getting outside the box. And I think people appreciate some of these folks getting outside the box. Right now, the Stacys are kind of playing in the same Democratic box, and the Republicans are playing in the same Republican box. I think in a general election, both sides are going to have to come out a little bit of where, you know, where their sandbox is and play well with others.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. This is The Political Breakfast, a service of 90.1 WABE.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We are back with the Political Breakfast Podcast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Theron Johnson, a Democratic strategist, is here, along with former Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland, filling in for Brian Robinson today. Welcome back to both of you. Real quickly, before we move to some other subjects, we were talking about the primaries for governor. Just a quick thumbnail. Theron, your other races to watch as we go through early voting.
Oh, there's a few. So we have a really talented woman, and she also has an opponent, so I want to be fair. But we have a talented woman, Sarah Amico, who's running for lieutenant governor. Really different approach. She's a newcomer to the scene. Owns a very successful trucking company. And then my good friend John Barrow is getting back out there. And Congressman, I hope one day you...
The often indestructible John Barrow.
The guy who kept, he moved and he moved and his district changed.
It cost us a ton of money.
But he has decided, Congressman, to come out of retirement and run for Secretary of State. And he also has, I think, two opponents, D. Dawkins Hagler and some others. And then Lindy Miller. She's running for PSC. On the Democratic side. She has some opponents as well, but she's a very, very energetic, passionate young woman who brings a different set of skills to the PSC race. So I'm looking at those races.
And a quick note, Congressman, before I get to you, I moderated the debates for Secretary of State in both parties yesterday at the Atlanta Press Club, and you can catch those on the Atlanta Press Club website.
I was just going to ask Theron, do you think it's possible the Democrats could come up with a completely female ticket for these statewide races?
It is very possible, Congressman. I looked at it. So, we know we're going to have a female in the two top slots on the Democratic side because governor and lieutenant governor are female candidates. And I'm not saying that John Barrow won't succeed, but if he were not to succeed, there's a very high possibility. But I think, and I may be wrong on this, but I need to double check. I think we have Charlie Bailey, who's
running for Attorney General.
So Charlie's a bulldog and a former young Democrat of mine. But yeah, he could possibly be the only one on the ticket for us.
Well, John Barrow, I tell you what, he is a real personable guy. He relates well with people and. He's a vicious campaigner. I mean, trust me, I'm very familiar with John Barrow and his campaigns because we tried for a long time, to get that seat.
A Democrat in a Republican district for years.
Well, listen, it wasn't really until the redistricting that we were really able to beat him. So that's going to be a good race. Now, it's funny, the number of candidates has so decreased in a number of years. You'd have 10 or 12 candidates in these races, and now the numbers are just getting less and less, like Charlie Bailey being the only guy in that attorney general's race. And so, and the Republicans
only
have—
That's on the Democratic side.
And then you look at the Republicans, Chris Carr, you didn't get any opposition.
Attorney General.
Lieutenant Governor's an open seat, and only three people got in that race, which to me was amazing.
Is it a lack of enthusiasm on the GOP side? We often hear about that, but remember, Trump won this state. So is that really it, do you think, Congressman?
I don't know if it's that or the environment has just gotten so nasty that people don't want to do it. And, the Democrats had the majority for 138 years, and, I think they lost it because they got stale. We've only had the majority in both bodies since 2004 and the governorship, so all three. So I hope we hadn't got stale in 10% of the time that it took the Democrats to get that way for the voters.
From the state to the city, Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms a couple of days ago gave her first State of the City address. Affordable housing, some of the themes from her campaign, such as improving education, those were highlighted in the address. Theron, I'll start with you. She's got, though, to put not just a vision together, but she's got to put a staff together after accepting the resignations of so many top officials. Is she going to be able to do that in any kind of quick time?
Well, the room was just true Atlanta. I mean, you had everyone from all sectors of the city. You had Democrats, Republicans, white, black, Asian, Hispanics, LGBTQ, straight, Jewish, everybody you can name was in the room for the State of the City because they wanted to hear this mayor have an opportunity to tell all of the citizens of Atlanta what she's been doing outside of responding to issues that were created by her predecessor. Mm-hmm. And so she gave a long list of successes and accomplishments in her short, less than 120-day tenure as mayor. The energy in the room was very interesting because you had former Mayor Sam Massel, former Mayor Andy Young, and former Mayor Shirley Franklin. The person who was clearly missing was former Mayor Kasim Reed. And I think that what people were looking from Mayor Bottoms is what was she going to do to continue the progress of Mayor Reed? Because let's face it, he left the city in good financial stability, and he did a great job as mayor. But I think that people really wanted to hear how are you going to continue your plight towards transparency, ethics, and more importantly, she announced that she's hiring a person to specifically manage open records requests. So for those of us who are in the media, who've talked about a lot of things that are being investigated right now, the lack of responsiveness and the expeditiously response in open records requests is something that has kind of put her in a tough position. But hey, I would tell you this, the mayor is open for new talent. The congressman talked about not being stale. She, at a time where, and she really wants me to say this, you know, when she's letting these people go, when she's accepting these resignations, it's not being done in a vindictive manner. She truly cares about every individual who serves the city of Atlanta.
Institutional knowledge is an important thing, especially in an administration, a brand new administration.
Yes, it is. And like Theron said, it's been 120 days, and some of these people, so I don't know how much time they've had for really a cohesive transition. And I think Mayor Bottoms understands that regardless of what Kasim did, and I know Kasim, and he's,
you guys work very well together.
Oh, yeah, we worked great together on several issues. But I do think she has got to cut those ties. I think she has got to get whatever, anything that might come out on the negative away from her.
But as Theron was implying, there's kind of a dichotomy between what the economic and business accomplishments of the Reed administration versus some of the questions about things like bonuses and ethics. So how do you thread that needle?
No, it's a tough needle to thread. And right now, I think she's done a pretty good job with it because she hadn't really talked about it. I mean, sometimes it's better just to keep your mouth shut and do like what Theron was talking about, just work hard and try to put together your own team. Now, it's going to be interesting to see, who some of these team members are and where they come from and what their specialties are. But I do think she realized that she had to make that break. But the one thing that I've always, admired about the Democratic Party is that at the end of the day, they're all going to hug each other and kind of be for each other. And Republicans, we continue the knife fight for years. I mean, it just, to me, it doesn't stop. And so I think by Shirley Franklin being there was a great sign because she's a lady that loves this city and understands that she needs to be there to support Mayor Bottoms.
Speaking of Republicans, just real quickly, there has been the proposal floated again by one of the candidates for governor, I think it's Hunter Hill, who said, okay, the state needs to take over Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. Once the election is over, assuming we have perhaps a Republican governor with perhaps continued Republican majorities in the legislature, does that idea come back up, Congressman, or would you advise against it?
Well, if back in 2000, I think Earl Earhart and I had a piece of legislation to do that.
I remember that.
When you take the world's busiest airport that is really controlled by the city council, I think that's a problem. I really do. And I don't know if the state taking it over is the really right, but it did get a lot of the conversation started. And I just think as far as investigations and different things go, if that airport ever gets opened up, there's going to be a lot more. This idea is not going to go away. I'm just telling you, investigating and getting into the guts of the airport is not going away.
My grandfather used to say, that dog just ain't going to hunt, right? And so I would tell you this. We started this legislative session off with Senator Burt Jones, who did a really good job of going around gathering signatures and really posed this threat to say, hey, I have all the Republicans, majority of them, and I have a few Democrats that have signed onto my bill to create this state authority. I think the problem that Senator Jones ran into, and I think that Governor Deal's administration reminded him of this, is that what's going to be the financial impact? What is going to be sort of the bonding rates and everything that the state will have to answer questions on if they were to try to create this authority? And Congressman, I remember you and Earl Earnhardt doing that because you guys were the originators of this whole idea of taking over the state. The state taking over the airport. But here's the negative connotation in the below the surface. And the mayor talked about this a little bit in her State of the City. If the airport was not the world's busiest and not deemed and qualified as the most effective and most efficiently run airport in the world, then I can see a point where Republicans wanting to bring this up. This is nothing but another piece of red meat that Hunter Hill, who I think is losing this race for governor, is trying to throw out there to rally up his conservative base. Now, I am very concerned, like many citizens of Atlanta, that when you do have people trying to mislead contracts and interfere in the open procurement process, mm-hmm. that does not help us keep this airport. But I believe that, more importantly, the legislators know that if you start wanting to talk about taking the airport away from the city of Atlanta, who I believe is doing a phenomenal job, and running it, it's just not going to get the legislative support it needs to ultimately make it to the governor's desk in this current climate. At a time where you have mayors and Representative Chairman Tanner and Brandon Beach working with DeKalb County and Fulton County and City of Atlanta, you really want to come back after this massive transit coalition that we've built that's going to help people then to have a conversation about taking the airport away from the City of Atlanta? I just think that that's not something that Republicans should be thinking about right now.
But there needs to be a conversation about it. And I mean, I agree with you. I mean, you know, it is a pretty efficient airport. It is, you know, sufficient in all the things that it does. But at some point, I do think it has to be looked at, if for nothing else, to assure everybody that, hey, look, this thing, I mean, how much better could it be run? And because that question is always going to be there. I mean, you got, who was it, Ben DaCosta. Ben DaCosta. I mean, there has been some things out there that haven't seemed just right, like you said.
You're talking about how he was let go by the mayor?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought Ben was doing a good job. I mean, to me, I mean, all the dealings. I was on the Transportation Committee in the House at the time, and I thought we had a pretty good relationship. So, and I don't know that we know all the backstory of some of that stuff that went on, but I do think it is a legitimate question. I do think it's a legitimate issue that needs to be looked at.
And one thing we should add, Congressman, and I know you know this, one of the things that came out of the legislature was, even though the bill didn't get the necessary votes to make it out of the Senate chamber, but there is a study committee that's happening right now in our state. Yeah,
good.
So they put together a study committee that I got to applaud Republicans on this, is that I knew they knew that dog was not going to hunt, but with this study committee, they've involved the city. and they want the city to have a role at the table somehow, some way, in full transparency, to really have this conversation that you're encouraging we have, Congressman.
That's great.
A couple of very quick points to close out. Theron, you mentioned the transit bill. Governor Deal signed the transit bill this week. And we have a couple of other bills pending, though, but certainly the Eagles Landing one has gotten a whole lot of attention. The reason that this new city proposal is different than all of the others that have gone before is that it takes part of an existing city, Stockbridge, to make part of the new one. And the people in Stockbridge who might be affected, the people who aren't in the part that's being taken out, have no say in what happens there. So those could be the grounds for a legal challenge. This is a tough one for the governor, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I was in the I was elected to the state legislature in 1992.
Yeah, because you've seen a lot of new cities come along.
Well, Dorothy Felton had been trying for Sandy Springs for I think since she was a baby. I mean, it was forever, and it could never get anywhere. Nowhere. In fact, I was there for 12 years. We never had a new city. And it was the legislative, in fact, it was a home rule kind of deal with the people in the county. And now we've had all these new cities come up. And I don't know that that's a good thing. I mean, Georgia has more counties, I think, than any other state in the union.
We have 159.
Yeah, and so now, we just keep these cities growing and growing and growing. And, you look at Columbus and Muskogee County and, Augusta and Richmond County, they went the consolidation route. Now everything else and it seems to be splitting up. And I just don't know if that's a good path to be going down.
Do you think that Governor Deal's consideration in deciding whether to sign or veto will be partly along those lines, Congressman, or will it be primarily the legal one? For instance, if I sign this, will the state be able to withstand the inevitable legal challenge to this really unique new city?
Yep. No, I think he's definitely going to look at the legal part of it. I mean, I think that's something that the governor does priority. I mean, that's his number one thing, is to make sure what he's signing has the legal authority to be signed.
You know, this everyone is watching this bill, because if the governor were to sign this bill into law, it would create a precedent in our state where I think you would see cities after city after city continuing to try to entertain a de-annexation in their city. So let me just explain what really is on the table. To your point, Dennis, is that this is a city of Stockbridge that is actually running effectively. They have a very small budget. And just because you have a few people in a neighborhood who are not necessarily satisfied with services that the city is providing, they have gotten their state senator to go and introduce a bill to de-annex away from a current existing city. So for our listeners, this has never been done in Georgia before. But I encourage the governor to not sign this bill, because it is clearly taking away local control, something that a lot of Republicans spend a lot of time talking about. Congressman, I remember you when you were in the state house and when you ran for Congress, you guys under President Bush and others, you guys really hammered Democrats home and basically giving local communities local control to determine how they wanted to govern locally.
Mm-hmm.
But if the governor was to sign this bill, let me create this reality for you. I suggest that you will see Buckhead entertaining conversations about whether or not they want to de-annex from the city of Atlanta. And Mayor Sam Massell has been adamantly opposed to that and his leadership in the Buckhead Coalition. But then you start getting into other cities and a lot of these new cities that a lot of reasoning from annexing from the county is because they wanted to basically have some independent say so over the services that they are being provided with. Now, a lot of these new cities have done it right. Some cities are still struggling, and a lot of them are trying to figure out, okay, now that we don't have the county services anymore, do we have to raise taxes? Do we have the revenue? Do we have the population to run the city effectively? So I think the reason the governor hasn't signed this bill yet is that I think he's hearing from a lot of constituents in the Eagles Landing and Stockbridge area saying, do not sign this bill. But Brian, when he was on this show a few weeks ago, suggested that he thought that the governor was going to sign it. And I just think that that would be bad for our state. It would put the state in a position where they're going to have to go through a lot of legal challenges. And I just think basically the people of Stockbridge and Eagles Landing deserve better.
One more bill the governor has signed, and I'll just ask you both very quickly. We've asked this question before on Political Breakfast, and now that Congressman Westmoreland is here, it's the bill that would ban you from holding your cell phone and texting or talking while you're driving as long as you're holding it in your hand. That's a bad thing. Theron, I know you are constantly plugged into your cell phone. Yeah. Congressman, you have yours too. Is this going to change your life?
Well, I'm going to have to probably dip into my savings account to pay all my wife's fines for doing that. But you know what? Holding it in your hand, look, I'm a hand. I've got the
Bluetooth
and all of that. And it is a distraction. I'm telling you, it is a distraction. And I'm glad. I'm really glad. I have fought it. When I was in the legislature, I fought it.
You fought the bills to ban?
I fought the bill to ban it. I said, this is crazy. Women are putting on their lipstick.
Yep.
You know, I mean, are we going to, you know, are
you
we?
You thought it was singling out one thing.
Yeah, I thought it was just singling out one thing. But now with all the traffic deaths and stuff and all the different things that we've had, I think it's a good deal.
So a change of heart, but is there going to be a change of habit?
My wife would disagree, but I don't do it that much.
much being the key.
I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop completely. Let me say that.
So I broke down and went to the Apple store and bought an Apple Watch. And my intent was to have an ability to not put the big iPhone in my pocket when I'm working out and running to get the watch. What I found myself doing immediately was looking at my watch while I'm driving. So I think, to the congressman's point, we all have to evolve. I have found, Dennis, that if you just can't respond to that one text or can't take that call at that moment, the world is not going to come to an end. And I think that the state has got to do a really good job of educating people on how these laws are going to be enforced. Because I don't know about you, Congressman, if a cop pulled me over, and if I'm not on my phone, I'm going to be respectful to this cop, he or she. But the ability to prove what I was doing with my phone and your judgment call you're going to have to make and whether I was actually holding it and what was my intent to do with it, I think you're going to see a lot of trouble trying to enforce this new law.
I agree. And I mean, you know, we got laws that says you can't run a red light. People run red lights every day. And, you know, I mean, how many laws is enough laws? But this particular one, when you're doing 70 miles an hour, and I've caught myself looking at it, and I look up and I may be kind of leaning over into the other lane. But like Darren said, that's self-awareness. You know, I mean, laws don't make crooks honest people. Change of heart makes people honest. So
a fine might do that too.
But I don't know what is the fine. I don't even know what it was. Murphy had a $10 fine for not wearing your seatbelt in a pickup truck or something. I can't remember what
it
was.
Miss Speaker Murphy.
No matter how big it is, I'm in trouble if I have to end up paying one, so I'm going to have to change too.
But if I may, Congressman Tech, because I think you're really unique to this podcast because, you know, Lynn Westmoreland was the sort of Georgia Donald Trump before there was a Donald Trump. And I mean the good qualities of Donald Trump, meaning, Congressman, you were not afraid to go to the well and say things, to fire up your base and criticize Democrats. I mentioned earlier that you are a staunch, you brought a lot of opposition. You and Congressman Lewis, I remember the heated debates you guys will have around voter ID. But take us there when you say you opposed this distracted driving bill because you thought it discriminated and it singled out individuals. Mm-hmm. But what do you think happened? What do you think the evolution was for these Republican legislators to finally in 2018, after 20 years plus of trying to get this bill or some form of it passed. What do you think the turning point of it was for them?
I think it's just the fact that so many lives have been lost with it. Because, you know, when they first started doing this, not everybody had a cell phone.
That's the point.
You know? And so they could be at home on the phone. Mm-hmm. Well, now most people don't have home phones. They have cell phones. And so rather than waiting to get home to call mama or, you know, check in at work or whatever, you're just going to do it from the car.
Right.
And so I think over the last 20 years, just the simple fact of the multiplication of the number of cell phones out there, and I use my car as my office. And Theron, I saw you sitting.
I was wrapping up a call, but I was not driving.
You were not driving. Yeah. You were sitting there.
Yeah.
But you're probably like me.
Yeah.
Your car is as much your office as your office.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I think that's the reason that people have come around. They've just seen the increase in the needless deaths that's out there. And I know we had one in Cowee de County where a young 4-year-old got hit by a distracted driver and killed. And so these things have just added up to it's time to do something.
I think if there was one tipping point, if you will, it was perhaps the accident involving those nurses in Savannah.
I-16.
Yeah, where I believe a distracted driver was the cause of that crash.
Yeah.
And that may have been it. In fact, I think that's where the governor is signing that legislation.
Yeah. Some of the parents are going down there.
Yeah. That's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare, and we've been joined by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and former Georgia Republican Congressman Lynn Westmoreland, who's pinch hitting for Brian Robinson this time. Thanks to both of you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Congressman. You are way more prepared than Brian ever would be for the show.
Our thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. Now, if you like this show, subscribe. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That's a great way to make sure other people can find us. And with the primary elections so close, you might want to check out the bonus helpings of the Political Breakfast, interviews with the major party candidates for governor. That'll be in your feed. Again, check that out wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back in your feed soon with more nourishing political conversations. Be sure to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.